Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Ravenpuffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join our Facebook group, the Ravenpuff Common Room, and on Instagram at the Rambling Ravenpuffs.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/therambling ravenpuffs, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in. Grab your butterbeer and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Ravenpuffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we're covering chapters 7 and 8 of The Chamber of Secrets, Mudbloods and Murmurs, and The Death Day Party. In these chapters, Harry learns about pure blood supremacy. Can we say institutionalized racism, boys and girls?
No kidding, yeah.
And then they attend the most dope Halloween party, and the night is ruined with ethnically motivated terrorism.
Sorry. Yes, it is. You framed it so well and intelligently that you just like took me, kind of blindsided me a bit.
Okay. So these chapters, what were your thoughts?
My first thought was, I guess I hadn't realized we had not heard the term mudblood before now, and just how powerful that word is in the wizarding community. And, you know, of course, there's some natural other words that you think of to fill that in. And of course, the character who says it is no surprise at all. And then the second chapter that we read, the Death Day Party, pretty interesting kind of party. I have some thoughts about their decision, and then what an ending to that chapter. Yeah, I'm ready to get into it.
Yeah, so what I really like about, again, Chamber of Secrets, because again, a lot of people in the fandom consider it their least favorite. In these chapters and the chapters to follow, we are really getting the foundation of the prejudice within this society.
Yeah, you know, when you had mentioned that this book was like not one of the fan favorites, I kind of was surprised really dealing specifically with these two chapters. I was like, there are some very heavy themes here that I know are built upon throughout the rest of the stories from what I know. This just feels like foundation for the rest of the series. And it's sad that it sounds like it's often dismissed.
Yeah, I guess some people maybe view it as, yes, it's necessary for the foundation, but that in itself, it's not very entertaining compared to, you know, how those themes are expanded upon, I guess, compared to the other books, but I like it.
You know, I wonder, like, now that you say that, as readers of a lot of Gothic literature, I didn't even think about it. I just thought, like, oh, this is really interesting. So we're just used to a little bit more of a, you know, a long haul through something than maybe some other readers, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. But let us begin with Chapter 7, Mudbloods and Murmurs. Harry spent a lot of time over the next few days dodging out of sight whenever he saw Gilderoy Lockhart coming down a corridor. Harder to avoid was Colin Creevy, who seemed to have memorized Harry's schedule. So it's really interesting that I highly doubt I really delved into in previous rereadings was we get both sides of celebrity culture demonstrated in this book, specifically the celebrity himself and what is often the stereotypical narcissistic archetype of what celebrity can do to a person. And then on the opposite end of the spectrum, we have Colin, who represents, you know, the awestruck, you know, viewer of that celebrity.
Yeah. And Colin gets a little frustrated with, or I mean, I'm sorry, Harry gets a little frustrated with Colin's kind of like fawning over him. And it also just kind of reminded me of, you know, it was a little sad. And it was also, you're talking about celebrity culture, somebody that's just so desperate to be liked by somebody. And they're just like, you know, kind of Colin will stop at nothing to get pictures of Harry doing like whatever. In this particular instance, he's basically following him to his Quidditch practice. And then we kind of get another like shortened explanation of Quidditch, which I was kind of like, okay, I see what, you know, you're doing here, Harry. You're just kind of saying like, hey, if you picked up the Chamber of Secrets without reading the other book, which why?
Yeah, like I have no sympathy, to me, I don't know. That's just unheard of that you would pick up a book in the middle of a series.
Totally baffling to me. And especially at this point in the book, I'm like, if you haven't read, you know, the Philosopher's Stone, stop reading this and go read the freaking Philosopher's Stone and then come back.
But. Yeah, it's like, okay, there was one time where I was specifically, what does it say about me, looking up werewolf romance.
Okay, now it says that you're a cool person. That's what it's.
So I found one, but I realized that it was like two in the series. And technically, it wasn't even like the same protagonist. Like, it was even a series that I could technically have gotten away with. But I'm just like, no, I'm going to read the first one. And the first one ended up being good. So why do you close yourself off, people? Read the first one.
Well, and I guess that's something that, I mean, this was always intended to be a series, right? As far as I'm understanding.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Cause, you know, sometimes, well, I guess even if you don't intend it to be a series, it's just kind of like if you're intending this to basically be a thousands upon thousands of page book, then just freaking start from the beginning. But anyway, sorry. I did realize that that's what was happening with the kind of the rundown of Quidditch was to have kind of set it up to.
Yeah, again, I didn't care for it either. What's interesting to look at Colin's, like, again, Colin is a kid, like, and he's a muggle-born, so all of this is brand new to him. So I'm not saying it's a condemnation of Colin or anything. It just makes me reflect on how much I have evolved as a person, and especially as we've discussed, quote-unquote, off mic, about certain work troubles I've been having and how the rigid social hierarchy within certain elements of my job, that if you don't have a certain like position or certain status, like basically certain administrators will just tell you to go pound sand.
I have not heard that expression before.
Oh, you haven't heard that before? Oh yeah, my dad like used it a lot.
That's funny. I hadn't. I like it.
Yeah. So for me, just looking at Colin, it's just so in contrary to where I am now because. Being traumatized by those various experiences, I'm just like, screw this social constructed hierarchy. Karl Marx was right, whatever.
With poor Colin, I mean, sometimes I know I can be a little bit like Colin. I think when I was reading this, I was like, oh gosh, sometimes like reading this character makes you cringe a little bit because he just so desperately wants to be liked. And I'm like, it's good to have an awareness, I guess, that, you know, Maybe rein it in a little bit, Colin, and myself sometimes. I mean, I think he's being earnest. And like you said, he's just so enamored with this new world. And we find out how much so here in a minute that he's kind of taking pictures of somebody who is kind of throwing up in a way because he's like so fascinated by it or he wants to take a picture. And it's just poor guy. I feel a little bad for him.
Yeah, so he ends up following Harry to the Quidditch pitch because Oliver Wood has woken Harry up at the crack of dawn to, you know, do their practice and everything. And like the first hour or so is purely strategy, like on the ground.
Ooh, that would stress me out.
And then they finally get up in the air.
And if I'm not jumping too far, they meet another Quidditch team on the Quidditch pitch. And yes, it's not
and,
really...
Yeah. Wood is livid. He's like, I booked the Quidditch pitch. I booked it. And Flint, who is the captain of the Slytherin team, and they make a note of saying, you know, Harry's observation is there were no girls on the Slytherin Quidditch team. So it's like, yay, like they're patriarchal on top of everything else.
I mean, given some of their ideologies and, if you were a Slytherclaw, you can hear Amy and I talk about some of these themes. If you would like to sign up for the Patreon, but we are, you know, kind of the sum of Harry's feminist leanings. That was an interesting observation and one I might have read past had I not been thinking about our upcoming conversation.
Yeah. And so Flynn basically says, yeah, you may have booked it, but I have a special note from Professor Snape. And I'm just thinking, like, does Snape, like, does this actually work? Like, is Snape just being a dick knowing that this letter won't hold up and maybe that the Slytherin team won't be able to, like, use the actual field but at least sabotage the Gryffindors? Because he has nothing to do with Quidditch. Like, what I'm assuming, if Oliver booked the field, I'm assuming that would be under the jurisdiction of Madam Hooch, who usually is the referee for the games.
Yeah, I never got the impression that, unlike McGonagall, I never got the impression Snape was, like, super into Quidditch. I think he's super into, like, pissing off Harry and, like, Slytherin superiority.
He's super into Slytherin pride against Gryffindor. And if that happens to take the form of Quidditch, okay.
That is some intense, like, anger toward something that is just a little crazy. But I think that, so not only do the Slytherins interrupt their practice, we find out that the Slytherin team has a fancy Nimbus 2001, and every team member has one because of Draco's dad.
Yep, and Draco has been the whole quote-unquote reason for Snape overruling the normal booking process is that they need to train Draco.
Oh yeah, because he's the Seeker, right? He's their new Seeker.
He's now the Seeker. So, like, there's a reason why there's so many Draco Harry fanfics, because Draco is so trying to, like, up one on Harry in the exact same categories. It's like, go do your own thing, Draco.
Yeah, be your own person, dude. That makes me think there's a whole romance genre of, like, enemies to lovers. So I understand where some of the fanfic is coming from. Not my preferred genre if I'm going to read romance, but I think it's funny that they get these fancier Nimbus, you know, 2001s and are, you know, then they're, like, all flying around and feeling like a bunch of badasses just because, you know, Draco's dad threw some money at the problem, which seems to be the way that sometimes people like to resolve problems, is just throw money at it.
Yeah, like, the way this sort of, again, confrontation ends up developing, it's if Draco doesn't want people to presume that, if he wants people to presume that he got on the Quidditch team purely for how badass he is on a broom, then why is he shoving it in everyone's face that his father bought these brooms?
I don't know. I feel like sometimes that's what he, like, falls on. It just drives me nuts every time. It's like some thing about, like, how much money he has and how much, like, money the Weasley doesn't have. It's so
obvious. Like, I've got in my notes here that Draco's response to Hermione stating the obvious doesn't match his shameless showcasing of the brooms that his father paid for as offended as he seems to be, which prompts him to say this really bad word. And the only thing I can really think of is maybe Draco is so used to people capitulating to his family that he didn't think anyone would dare call him out on it.
That's an excellent point. I think that there are people that, you know, they do kind of get their way. I guess when we were talking about work experience, I know I've had coworkers that are just, you know, feel like they just can kind of get their way and act like a certain way. And then somebody calls them out and they shrivel or they react in, like, a venomous way. They just kind of strike. And I feel like that's exactly what Malfoy does here.
Yeah, and I think part of it is, in a way, that's a proper assessment that, you know, people who are aware of, you know, sort of the social status of certain families like the Malfoys, that Malfoy is making an accurate assessment that maybe most people wouldn't say anything, even though he's rubbing it in their faces. But Hermione, because she is Muggle-born, she is unaware of these sort of, like, nuances because she's new to this society. So she just opens her mouth and just tells it as it is.
God love her for that, even though, I mean, and kind of the sad thing, So Malfoy, I didn't know if you wanted to go ahead and read the line and what he says to her.
No, again, you can go ahead.
Okay, so he says, no one asked your opinion, you filthy little mudblood. And then everybody reels, like, when he says that, like, oh my God. And she's kind of, her reaction is like, okay. You know, she doesn't know. And I thought about other instances where somebody has said something to somebody else and they just are naive. They're just like, well, that I don't understand what that means. And we have that moment. But based on everybody's reaction, we know just how vile his language was toward her. It sounds like, I guess, on the word, I'm not going to say any any derogatory terms toward any group of people, but you know it's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's basically an equivalent of the N-word.
That's kind of what I surmised a little bit from that. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's interesting, like, the way, again, the way everyone is just in complete and absolute uproar. Like, Fred and Alicia's like, how dare you? Like, Fred and George basically jump Malfoy, and Flint has to, like, shield Malfoy from the twins beating him to a pulp.
But good for Fred and George. Like, I love how everybody is, like, you know, they people like Hermione as, you know, sometimes I think she's portrayed a little unfairly, but they were like, no, you don't call our friend that.
Yeah. And reminds me, just yesterday, there's a viral video going around about there's a Mexican or Hispanic gentleman, and it's like a PTA meeting, like at a school. And, you know, they're talking about, like, racism, particularly with bullying. And so this Mexican guy is stand-ups with a mic and is talking about, you know, his son's experiences and saying, like, you know, going to my son's bedroom and seeing him crying because he's experiencing at this school. And then another parent or teacher, or I don't know who, in the meeting said, so why don't you go back to Mexico? And everyone just gasped and is like shocked and appalled. And then the Mexican guy is just laughing because he cannot deal with the hilarity of he's, you know, talking about his son being bullied for racism. And that's why there's a problem, because look at the parents.
That is, I mean, God, I hate people sometimes. I mean, just that, but exactly. Like, no wonder that's happening. I mean, they learned it from their parents, just like Mr. Malfoy probably learned this from his family, and they're, you know, feeling superior. And okay, so mudblood, they explain it, just means like not pure blood. That can be, I mean, that's basically all it means. So that could,
yeah, like it's not like it was once a neutral term and it got turned dirty. Like the absolute normal neutral polite word is muggle-born.
Okay. Okay.
And that's the only term you should be using in polite society. Like, this is, you know, wanting to say the N-word.
That's what, but so calling somebody a mudblood could be like the equivalent of somebody that was like half and half, or.
Well, technically, for those who are half-blood, they're not even considered like muggle, like mudblood. Mudblood is specifically, you have no wizarding family whatsoever.
Okay, thank you. That's what I now I understand. Well, so Ron gets so pissed, and poor Ron, with his busted wand, which I have a question about that, tries to curse Malfoy and ends up kind of backfiring on him, and he starts belching out slugs, which is super gross.
Yeah. What, did you have a question about why Ron, no one gives him a new wand?
The wands. Okay. So I started reading this and I was like, what is the deal with the wands? So yes, why can't we magic this wand to back? And, you know, I know he had some spello tape, I think it was, to like fix it, but I'm just like, these people are magic. Like, why not just be like, zoop, your wand's fixed. I don't know. So,
well, idea is the wand is such a magically powerful item that it's not something that can be easily repaired. So if it snaps literally in half the way Ron's has, then that means it's gone. It's done.
Okay. So we need to, poor Ron needs to get a new wand sometime, which I know that, again, relating it, talking about the money, that's not something he can just write home and say like, hey, mom and dad, I need a new wand. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There are a lot of fans criticize this, you know, as a sort of plot hole that, yeah, they're expensive, but that's also a necessity. It's like me getting this new laptop, but it took 6+ months because my work wanted to be bitchy.
So your work was like, you have to have a busted wand for a little while. That's
yeah, awesome. Basically, you have to have a busted laptop while you're working remotely.
Ugh, how annoying. That had to be frustrating.
Yeah, so And also it's the sense of his family is like punishing Ron that you screwed up and snapped your wand in a really stupid accident that you could have so easily avoided. So deal with it.
Yeah, that's true. There was so that's their mentality,
which yeah. I can understand to a certain extent, but it's this happened to ricochet off himself. But a broken wand is so unpredictable that the teachers should be stepping in and being like, okay, like here's a spare wand, like until you can get your family to buy you a new one.
Right. Yeah. Like,
and that just never happens.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I asked because this, it kind of baffled me while I was reading this. I could not wrap my head around, like, we get this poor kid a different wand. But after the belching slugs, I thought they would go to the hospital wing, but they don't. They go and visit Hagrid.
Yeah, they go to Hagrid because he's closer and they think he would know the sort of, it's animal oriented. So they think he'll be able to help.
And then fortunately, he just kind of has to ride it out, basically, right? But before that, they still see Gilderoy Lockhart leaving Hagrid's house. And they're kind of like, what? What's going on here?
Yeah. So basically, we're seeing a pattern of Lockhart is getting up in all the teacher's business. And Hagrid isn't even a teacher. He's the groundskeeper.
Right. And so Lockhart is just basically like going around telling everybody how to do their business. But I love Hagrid's reaction to Lockhart because he's kind of like can see through it, which I think is, it makes me love Hagrid a little bit more. He's kind of like, yeah, this guy's kind of full of it. So
I never thought about it before, but I think it might, like, Lockhart's antics must look especially contemptuous to Hagrid, who has never even gotten the recognition that he probably should have gotten throughout the years.
Yeah, that's an excellent point because oh, poor Hagrid. I can't wait to know more about Hagrid. I have so many questions and I know they're just not answered yet. So I can't ask him. But good on Harry and Ron and Hermione because they are kind of like, what is going on with Lockhart here? Like, why is he here? And Hagrid kind of talks about him. And
yeah. And so it's in this whole scene in between Ron throwing up slugs is that it's all broken down that this is basically the N-word and that it's used as a derogatory term for people who have no magical heritage. So basically the idea that Muggleborns don't belong in wizarding society.
I never got the impression that Hermione was like, then she was just like super devastated by it. I think I kind of got the impression she was kind of like, well, that's kind of stupid, you know, and Hagrid even says, and they haven't invented a spell our Hermione can't do, basically. Oh, and then of course, Morgan would love this. They take a dig at Neville.
Yeah, that was in my notes. Why do they have to throw Neville under the bus?
I don't know, but leave him alone. Poor Neville. I like
them. I remember editing the Philosopher's Stone episode and it's Morgan was saying like, Neville, there are people who do spells and there are people who dig and you dig.
That is so funny because that's exactly what I thought about because I listened to the episode and I was like, oh goodness, Morgan, that's pretty funny.
So yeah, it's interesting like, you know, obviously this is the sort of like stand-in for racism. And that's of course an interesting topic to be thinking about now because of all the racial upheaval, like first with George Floyd, not that it was the first, like this has been going on right. for centuries, but the recent wave, shall we
right.
say.
Right.
Like, you know, George Floyd and, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement, but also I think very recently in the last few weeks or a month or so is, you know, a reboot in anti-Asian hate.
Yeah, which is, I'm glad it's getting the attention it deserves. Several friends who, you know, are from different parts of Asia. And some of the stories that they've told me just before this kind of came out, I'm glad to see it being attention being brought to the subject because it's any sort of nonsense like this hate and violence toward people just is not okay. And it's interesting that we're, you know, we talk about it here. And again, I always talk about how this was written as a kid's book and how we're approaching some heavy subject matter for a kid. And I'm glad that everybody's reaction was so strong to calling somebody something unkind and horrible. And yeah. I'm glad everybody was upset about it.
I don't want to see it as an immediate metaphor for racism because again with racism it's all about how you look whereas in mm-hmm. this society you can't tell right off the bat if someone's pure blood or not.
That makes me think of something interesting. I mean, that makes me think of just, you know, like sexuality. That's just
like sexuality, discrimination against sexuality. But what made me think of is specifically like religion. And like if you're, you know, there are certain characteristics with being physical characteristics ethnically with being Jewish, but not always. Or if you're another, you know, religion, that it doesn't scream like in neon green lights across your forehead, hey, I'm of this minority religion.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's a good point, too.
You know, I don't go screaming, you know, hey, I'm a pagan, look at me. But at the same time, I don't hide it either. But I know full well just where I live in the Midwest that there would be plenty of people in surrounding towns who would gladly grab their torch and pitchforks.
Yeah. And I would hate that and I would be very mad. But because I like you, so I would probably go kick some ass. I think that it just doesn't make sense to me, you know, the otherness, and I they're just scared because they don't understand, and it's just so sad.
Yeah, in the context of this particular society, I think it's the idea of we don't know the exact, you know, history of why they decided that we're going to live separately from, you know, Muggles, because they just outnumber us so much and we don't want to have to deal with solving all their problems. So I think a part of it in this society, not to justify it by any means, is, you know, and they in essence have been forced, they are in their eyes evolutionarily superior, but they are the ones that have to live in hiding.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And so it's not a stretch to the imagination that there's a resentment there, a historical resentment, and the idea of allowing Muggleborns to enter their society is just to them being infiltrated and not having any sort of space whatsoever for wizards.
Yeah, that's interesting. It made me think of True Blood and just kind of the first season where they're letting the vampires are coming out of the coffin and the reaction of some people. And there's a whole church against vampires. Anyway, that's kind of more falling into our gothic podcast, but there's some vampires in here, so it's all good. But an interesting thing to talk about within the context of the story, and also glad that it was approached as not something to be dismissed, but something to defend, you know, Hermione, and also that we understand more about different prejudices within the wizarding world, and that there are prejudices. And that's kind of where this gets into a little bit of, you know, it's not the typical, like, everything is peace and love and everybody loves each other. It's more like, yeah, there's some dark things.
The idea, not even though it's a magical world, it's not a utopian world.
Yes, exactly.
Hagrid makes the comment of it's probably best that it backfired because, you know, it wouldn't be any good for you to be messing, you know, with the Malfoys. And so even Hagrid, not that Hagrid thinks that Malfoy wouldn't have deserved it, but he understands that to attack Draco Malfoy is not the same as attacking another kid.
Yeah, I guess that's him. Oh, go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, no, and just the idea that he knows that if Ron were to have done something, Lucius Malfoy would be up at the castle all on their asses.
Right, yeah. That's, I guess, some, like, adult versus kid logic, you know? Like, Ron was just pissed that somebody was mean to his friend, and Hagrid sees kind of the other repercussions, and it would have been a lot worse for the Weasleys. And then, like, Hagrid starts giving Harry a bad time about his his fame, which I thought was kind of funny.
Yeah, he's like, why don't I have an autograph, Harry?
Yeah. He's like, I've not been giving out signed photos.
And then teasing him about Ginny.
Oh, yeah. Stop. Poor Jenny.
Because she's been, again, poking around his, like, cabbage patch or whatever.
I also like how Hagrid is, like, kind of like, yeah, I've been kind of helping those pumpkins out a little bit. Like, and then we kind of.
Oh, yeah. The engorgement charm.
Yeah. With his umbrella. But poor Jenny. I felt bad for her. She seems cute.
So Hagrid included, no one believes that Lockhart did all the things that he says he did. And he's annoying everyone in the staff. It makes sense that Dumbledore is scraping the bottom of the barrel since the last Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher died.
Yeah, so we kind of learned that, you know, because I think there's a level of trust. People are like, oh, well, if Dumbledore hired him on, then this guy must know what he's doing. And then kind of Hagrid reveals like, it seems that position is jinxed. So maybe.
Yeah, the fact that Dumbledore was so desperate for somebody, because literally no one will touch this job anymore now.
Not even Snape. And I think maybe we talked about this last time, but for some reason I have a mental block about it. I always thought there was like a little bit of jealousy that Snape wanted the position, or I don't know, maybe
I think Percy does admit that. We don't know whether Snape tried and Dumbledore refused, like, or that Snape has since given up. We don't know that. We don't know exactly what the dynamic is there.
Okay. All right.
So whether if Snape still wants it and Dumbledore is barring Snape from getting it, then excluding Snape, no one else was available except Lockhart.
Ugh, the worst. Well, I just think he's annoying. But
yeah. Well, go ahead.
Oh no. So then they leave Hagrid's, and then they get to finally, which I wondered if this was ever going to happen, serve their detention. And Ron gets to polish silver, and Harry gets to address envelopes for Lockhart. What a joy.
Yeah, and I have a feeling that McGonagall knows Harry, and so deliberately to punish him, she's like, you're going to do something I know you're really going to hate.
That sounds like no fun, especially given Lockhart's demeanor. I wouldn't really want to spend too much time with him. So.
Yeah. Yep. Harry and Ron slouched into the Great Hall in states of deepest gloom, and Hermione behind them was wearing a, well, you did break school rules, sort of expression.
That was pretty fine. Pretty funny, because I can see her little face in my mind.
And so Harry goes to meet Lockhart in his office, and it's like four grueling hours of like signing, you know, addressing envelopes with stamps and everything, and all while having to listen to Lockhart's drabble about, you know, celebrity is as celebrity does, and fame's a fickle friend, Harry.
Yeah, but then he's sitting here and he's kind of irritated, and then he hears this voice like off in the distance.
Come to me. Let me rip you. Let me tear you. Let me kill you.
That was terrifying. Thank you, Amy. That was scary.
Bringing in my inner exorcist.
You did an excellent job. And so he's basically, we're assuming he's hearing Voldemort, which, hey, Voldemort, like, come on. He needs to get a different game, because let me rip you, let me tear you, let me kill you, that's not really enticing to anybody. So it's scary. And then
I doubt it's meant to be enticing as it is intimidating.
I get, yes, intimidating. I was just thinking, like, if I was going to, like, lure somebody so I could, like, mess with them, this is not the approach I would take. But I'm sure Voldemort is just trying to freak him out. So mission accomplished. Mission accomplished.
So he tries, like, he asks, like, didn't you hear that, Lockhart? And Lockhart hasn't heard anything.
Interesting. Do you think he's lying?
Yeah, you think he's lying?
I don't know.
Because even Ron admits that even if someone were in the room and invisible, they would have had to open the door and you would have noticed that.
Yeah, this is all very suspicious. That whole exchange, and I don't know where it's going. So I guess I'll just not know for a while.
And that concludes chapter 7.
Chapter 7. It was pretty interesting, and it got pretty dark there a couple times, so.
Yep. Good. And now we have chapter 8, the Death Day Party. So. Let's see what we got here. October arrived, spreading a damp chill over the grounds and into the castle. Madame Pomfrey, the nurse, was kept busy with a sudden spat of coals among the staff and students. Her pepper-up potions worked instantly, though it left the drinker smoking at the ears for several hours afterwards.
So this confused me again. Sorry to, like, ask a bunch of questions, but please, everybody, remember I'm the newbie. They can get colds? Like, that just kind of baffles me. I didn't know the wizards could get sick. So.
You think it's like the, like, Lord of the Rings elves where they can't get drunk?
I guess I didn't even think about that, because I feel like they would just, you know, I think all I've thought about is, like, disease and infection and all this stuff. Like, I would, like, go, like, antimicrobial or whatever, and like anti, you know, like sanitize everything. But which I guess that kind of thinks about Ron had to clean without using any magic, but it just surprised me that they could get colds. So
yeah, no, they're not, again, they're not inhuman, but like they can get the same things and they can break bones. They can do, they do everything that muggles do. They can just get healed really, really quickly.
Okay, that makes sense.
And so basically Harry is just coming back from a Quidditch practice and he bumps into Nearly Headless Nick.
Which I'm glad he did, because we got a little bit more information about how he became Nearly Headless Nick, and quite a dramatic. That getting hit 45 times in the neck with a blunt axe would qualify you to join the Headless Hunt. The thing that I fixated on is getting hit 45 times in the neck with a blunt axe. How awful.
Yeah, and so Nick is in a tiff, basically, because he's been rejected from the Headless Hunt.
Because he wasn't headless enough, basically, right? Because he was nearly headless.
He could not partake in activities such as head polo or head juggling and all sorts of things.
It's dark.
So do you agree with their decision?
I mean, like, the poor guy is, like, hasn't he been through enough? Just let him be on the dang headless whatever. I mean, I don't know. It feels a little, what's the word? A little too picky, but maybe that's just me.
To me, it seems like this is a club not so much based on we were all decapitated. It's more a club based on very specific like games and activities that they do.
Yeah. Make some adjustments for Nearly Headless Nick. He seems like he was a decent guy. I don't know. Yeah. That's just me.
So, yeah, I was just thinking, you know, he tells Harry, like, make sure to say that I'm scared. It's like, Nick, you need to find purpose beyond being the typical scary ghost.
Yeah.
Like, you know, beyond this Headless Hunt rejection, like, he doesn't give a crap about being a scary ghost, but yeah.
Yeah, he's a funny ghost. I don't know. He's just kind of I like that they depict the ghosts this way. They're just kind of like just literally people who are no longer living. They're ghosts.
Harry tries to leave, but Harry gets caught by Filch.
Oh, Filch. Always.
And I'm just wondering, what is Filch's story? Why the hell is he at this school? Why isn't Filch like the warden of Azkaban?
That's a great question, because he seems super into like of what I'm assuming of. I know a little bit of Azkaban. It's basically wizard prison, right?
Yeah.
Okay. It seems like he might have a better time there than with a bunch of children but I don't know. Maybe he's, I don't know. I don't know. Weird
like,
guy.
Again, well, I think it's true of all like really nasty teachers who hate children. It's like, why are you in education?
I guess, is there a level of self-loathing? I don't know. But I also want to know what the deal is with him and Mrs. Norris, because I know she's a cat, but like, was she always a cat?
I don't know. Was she?
I don't know.
We'll just have to wait and see, won't we?
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, so Filch is so angry about all the mud that Harry trekked in that he makes Harry, like, march off to his office. But then, I love the detail that Fred and George have their own cabinet.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. I liked that, too.
Yep. But then Peeves decides to cause a ruckus, and that leaves Harry alone in Filch's office for a time. And what does he find there?
Yeah, he finds this quick spell, a correspondence course in beginner's magic. So I think that maybe Harry and myself had always assumed that Filch was a wizard, and maybe he's not, or, you know, the quick spell, you know, book that Harry reads, it's very basic. And they're talking about, it's so basic to the point that they're talking about, I think, how to hold your wand, right?
Yeah.
Like that's, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it brings up the question of, is magic all or none in this world?
Is magic all or none in this world? I don't know. I mean, this kind of threw me for a loop a little bit too, just like it did Harry.
I'm looking back. Have we ever seen Filch cast a spell?
No. And I think and I've never thought about it. I guess because he's there, he's a presence, he's very menacing, but he's not like, I don't know. It's all very surprising.
So, but when Filch comes back, he's like really indignant and really like in a scare that Harry saw this.
And Harry basically pretends that like he has no idea what he's talking about, to which I don't know, not to like hurt his pride, but I think to me it was just like confusion and he didn't want to piss off Filch anymore.
Of course. Yeah. And so, yeah, Filch is so like perturbed by like by the potentiality of Harry seeing it that he just tells Harry to get out and he leaves the office unpunished.
That's a big deal for Filch.
He's Yeah. I think that's supposed to be a testament for how much Filch was shaken that Harry might have seen this.
Well, the mystery. Filch is a mystery to me still. But Nearly Headless Nick is out there and invites Harry to a very interesting party.
Yes, his death date party, which I guess he died on Halloween.
This had got to be quite the dilemma, because Halloween is so cool at Hogwarts, you know, and a big deal. But I thought it was really nice that Harry decided to go to Nearly Headless Nick's death day party. And Hermione's pretty psyched about it, too.
Yeah, she finds it, like, fascinating. And I'm just thinking, like, why couldn't they do both? Why couldn't they just, like, have grabbed, like, you know, a fistful of candy, like, loaded their pockets and just nibbled on candy while they were at the death day party?
I wondered that as well, because the food at the death day party is definitely not edible for their consumption by any means.
Yeah, and Hermione is literally speculating that they probably let it rot to let the smell or taste be really strong.
That was a very interesting observation on Hermione's part. I also thought it was really, really gross.
Yeah. And then, so yeah, overall, Death Day Party, what did you think? Where is it? The passageway leading to Nearly Headless Nick's party had been lined with candles, too, though the effect was far from cheerful. There were long, thin, jet-black tapers, all burning bright blue, casting a dim, ghostly light, even on their own living faces. The temperature dropped with every step they took. As Harry shivered and drew his robes tightly around him, he heard what sounded like 1,000 fingernails scraping an enormous blackboard.
That sounds awful. And Ron says, is that supposed to be music?
It was an incredible sight. The dungeon was full of hundreds of pearly white translucent people, mostly drifting around a crowded dance floor, waltzing to the dreadful, quavering sound of 30 musical saws, played by an orchestra on a raised blackdrop platform. A chandelier overhead blazed midnight blue with 1,000 more black candles. Their breath rose in a mist before them. It was like stepping into a freezer. This sounds awesome.
It reminds me of The Mask of the Red Death for some reason by
Like the final black room.
Yeah, kind of. Like it's just kind of, it's so ominous and dark and unpleasant, I guess. Interesting.
Just because we're gothic nerds, we think it's awesome, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a little spookier where we are, you and I are like,
like, have you ever been in a situation or like market or whatever where like the rotting food like smell was just horrendous?
Unfortunately, yeah. Like I've picked up, you know, food sometimes and brought it home and then I'm like, oh my god, that bag of potatoes, there's like a rotting potato in it, and it's just I can't imagine being surrounded by that gross smell.
The worst thing I ever experienced was a fish market on the coast in Morocco, and it was just so smelly and just all, it was the evening, so like people were throwing out like the bad stuff that they, or the stuff they didn't sell, and I had to step over a shark's head.
Oh my god. That's awful.
Although what we bought there, we cooked it was delicious, but.
Well, now you can like really put yourself in this situation and kind of know the sensory experience, because there was a great maggoty haggis, a slab of cheese covered in furry green mold, and in place of pride, an enormous gray cake in the shape of a tombstone with tar-like icing forming the words, Sir Nicholas de Mimsey Porpington died 31st of October, 1492.
Yep. It's a double-edged sword. Like, I love fish. I love shellfish, but it always smells bad.
This part sounds like the worst part. I don't know how long I'd last in a very smelly
space. Yeah, as awesome as the chandelier with the blue-black candles are, I don't know how much I could have stayed with all the rotting food.
Yeah, that'd been a little much for me. We then encounter, and I know I've mentioned her before, Moaning Myrtle. And I think because of the movie and for some reason her voice is so unique, I remember that. And Hermione is like, I don't want to have to deal with Moaning Myrtle. And then is it
Peeves? And they're like, who the hell is Myrtle? She's a girl who haunts a girl's toilet.
That's a sad, haunting life. To haunt a toilet? Ugh.
Like she couldn't pick anywhere else?
I sure would not like to haunt a children's school's toilet. Like, sounds awful.
Yeah. So what did you... So you think you only know remember Myrtle from the movies. So, you know, obviously... Myrtle was not introduced in the movies this way. So what did you think of this interaction at the Death Day party of with, you know, Hermione and the gang and Myrtle?
Well, I felt a little bad for, because it's stupid Peeves is the person or the entity that kind of gets her going, right? That gets her upset and sad and whatever. And he's kind of a dick to her, which I thought was not very nice. I don't know. Poor Moaning Myrtle. She just sounds like a little sad sack. And I just thought, you know, good on Hermione and Ron and Harry for like trying to be decent to her. But probably, yeah, like, you know, not my favorite character.
Yeah. Like we'll learn more about Myrtle. So like my judgment of her is kind of blurred. So it's natural to feel sympathy for her. But for me over the years, like to me, Myrtle is a professional victim.
Interesting. Okay.
She does very little to try to like help herself or just presumes the worst and is basically just waiting to be offended.
I know some people like that.
But and then the Headless Hunt arrives and just completely upstage Nick's own Death Day party, which I didn't think was very nice.
So they're like they're not going to let him be part of their little crew. Then they're going to come and like ruin his party. That's really not very.
And Harry, true to his word, tries to say, oh, I find Nearly Headless Nick so terrifying. And the Patrick is just like, I bet he told you to say that, didn't he?
Poor guy. Can't catch a break here.
Nick tries to have his speech, but they completely, you know, disrupted with their little antics. And it's in these antics that Harry, Ron, and Hermione decide to bounce.
Yeah. And then what do we hear again?
Rip, tear, kill.
And it was the same voice that he heard upstairs, which he did tell Ron about. Yeah. And I couldn't surmise if Ron and Hermione heard it.
So hungry for so long. Kill, time to kill.
So they get the heck out of there, which then they realize they're going to run into the Halloween feast is just, I don't know, they're trying to like get to it or they realize it's over.
They were originally, I think, trying to maybe get like to the dessert part of the feast. And then they're totally derailed by, at least Harry is, by this voice. And so they follow Harry, like, you know, away from the Great Hall up following this voice.
Yeah. And then just to make it super scary, the voice, what does the voice say?
I smell blood. I smell blood.
And then Harry screams, it's going to kill somebody. And Ron is like, what is that all about? Because they start hauling it. And then what do they run into?
Something was shining on the wall ahead. They approached slowly, squinting through the darkness. Foot-high words had been daubed on the wall between two windows, shimmering in the light cast by flaming torches. The Chamber of Secrets has been opened. Enemies of the air, beware.
And then what's that hanging underneath? Miss Norris, the caretaker's cat, was hanging by her tail from the torch bracket. She was stiff as a board, and her eyes were wide and staring. So all of this sets up something went down, and then all the students are about to bear witness to this as well. But Ron, Hermione, and Harry get like a moment to take this in themselves.
Yeah. How would you react to such a situation?
Well, I would probably, like, what do they say? Fight, flight, or freeze? I would freeze. I would just be like, first of all, what the hell? Second of all, what is the Chamber of Secrets? And why is Mrs. Norris there? that would be, I would be very shocked. What about you?
I would be in Ron. I'm just like, nope, I'm not doing this, and trying to get out of there ASAP.
It's the wise decision.
Before, you know, they just finished the feast, and so all of them are clambering up, and then they get confronted by being found. Basically, it was in essence a crime scene.
Right. Well, and then, you know, stupid Malfoy gets a chance to use, like, his favorite derogatory term again. Enemies of the air, beware. You'll be next, mudbloods. It's just like, dude, chill. Like, I hate that.
He had pushed to the front of the crowd, his cold eyes alive, his usually bloodless face flushed as he grinned at the sight of the hanging immobile cat.
I mean, so I don't know what we're trying to imply here. Is it, I mean, obviously, Malfoy is, to me, that's like, I know Mrs. Norris gets a lot of, not a lot of love, but like, if he's pretty psyched to see something like that, it's kind of like, this guy's got some issues. What a way to end a chapter.
Yes. And thus concludes chapter 8. So, yeah.
Dark.
Dark stuff. Dark. Again, and people say that Chamber of Secrets is not the very good one.
Well, so far, everybody, I'm disagreeing with you, because those have been pretty fun chapters to read.
Alrighty then, shall we move on to Gothic Geek Out?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so what were your Gothic elements that you honed in on?
I mean, that, you know, the ominous voice, which you totally nailed. Good job. I couldn't understand fully if it's implied that the Chamber of Secrets is now open is supposed to be written in blood. Sure seems that way. So that definitely doesn't, I mean, maybe I'm kind of a stretch with the Gothic, and then just the whole Death Day party. All of that we just kind of mentioned is pretty Gothic, to the point where it reminded me of The Mask of the Red Death by Edgar Allan Poe. So how about you?
Yeah, certainly less. Again, the Death Day party was, I feel, very superficial in its Gothicness, because, again, it's not trying to harbor. It's a normalization of what is supposed to be scary. Because it's like, oh, no, hey, we're just having like a birthday party. You know, we have our Death Day parties just like you do. Like, they're a little different, but again, they're not supposed to instill terror in you.
Right, right.
Yeah, so the Death Day party and the ghost, that's only at a superficial level. As you said, more so is the voice, particularly the idea of, you know, when you get your protagonist in a Gothic novel and they go in the manor and they see or hear things that no one else is seeing or hearing.
Oh, yeah, that's an excellent point. Sorry.
So it's not just that there's a voice that's being a sort of creepy stalker. It's like, you know, only manifesting itself to one specific person.
Yeah, that's a very Gothic-y thing. I mean, I'm thinking of, we just talked about The Wife Upstairs and just, in, you know, kind of how in that case, they could be gaslighting her, like, no, you're not hearing anything. But very often in a Gothic novel, it's like, well, yeah, there is some gaslighting.
I immediately thought of that because of, you know, over the weekend I had my book club where we reviewed The Quickening by Rhiannon Ward, which does have some of those elements. And I'm super excited because, as I told you, she will be joining us for Sublimely Gothic for an interview.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm excited.
Yeah, well. So definitely her book deals with that sort of stuff as well. And then ultimately, I think the ultimate Gothic element is that crime scene of the writing in blood on the wall.
Yeah, that's pretty intense. I mean, that's pretty, like I said, what a way to end a chapter. And shocking a little bit. I mean, I kind of thought, like, something written in blood, like, good God, what are we doing here? It's kind of up the ante. So we have the ominous voice, and then we have the notice written in blood, and it's all just kind of a recipe for, like, something very bad is going to happen. And I feel like we've been getting those warnings since, you know, Dobby showed up.
Was this the thing that Dobby's warning about, or is it something else entirely? And this is just a side conspiracy? We shall find out.
Yeah.
Alrighty then. So, shall we do Tarot of the Day?
Yes.
Okay, I'm shuffling. Let's see. Okay, what am I picking? The Ten of Wands. Ooh.
Hmm.
Ten of Wands. I think the wands were originally the precursors to the diamonds in our normal playing cards.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yep. And let's see. Ten of Wands. Like, it's kind of debated. Like, the Hogwarts houses each have a Greek element, water, fire, earth, air. So, too, with the suits of the Minor Arcana in the tarot, where it's obvious that the cups represent water. The pentacles mm-hmm. represent earth. But there's kind of this weird history where the wands, I think, originally represented air and the swords represented fire. But something happened where they were, like, trying to, like, conceal various elements. And so they switched them to, like, confuse people. So now most people basically say that the wands are associated with fire and that the swords are associated with air.
I didn't realize that there was that complicated history. I remember that wands equal fire because of Harry Potter, because of, like, the sparks that shoot out of wands. That's how I remember the fire element. So, and the swords okay. and the swishing noise.
To me, I kind of affiliate more with the older pairing because I think of swords being forged in fire and having to be, like, heated really hotly to be, you know, created. And then wands, you just swish them in the air.
That, I mean, isn't it interesting? Because, like, what you said originally, that makes so much sense. And I think that's why I do confuse the wands and the swords as far as their element. Cups is easy, you know, but...
Yeah, pentacles are easy, but okay. Yeah, the Ten of Wands notes that you are taking on an extra burden, a heavier workload, or greater responsibility. Even though it is weighing you down and making things tougher for you, you understand it is only temporary, so you are willing to put in the hard work now to accomplish your goal and reap the rewards later. For example, you may work extra hours to save up for a family holiday. Sometimes the Ten of Wands appears when you are unconsciously taking on extra responsibility and finding yourself feeling weighed down, exhausted, and burnt out.
I think that's a good applicable one for these chapters. I mean, I always think that. I mean, hence the, you know, the nature of tarot doing what it's, yeah. what it's so supposed I think to do.
First thing that comes to mind to me on a lighter note is the investment in Quidditch.
Mm.
And basically Wood is wanting to train really, really hard because, you know, they had to forfeit the Quidditch Cup last year because Harry was in the hospital after defeating Big V.
Yes.
So he couldn't play Quidditch, and so they lost by just an unfortunate comedy of errors. And so now Wood is like, okay, we really, really, really need to win. And so he's like scheduling them extra practice and all of that, like making them go the extra mile.
Yeah. I like that take on it because I was immediately going to the darkness.
Yeah. You can explain the dark stuff. Go ahead.
Oh, no. So I was thinking of the Chamber of Secrets being open, the kind of obligation that I think Harry, you know, does he need to take it on? I don't know, but he sure seems to be in situations where it presents itself to him and then he takes it on as his burden. So I think in just the nature of the stories, we know this is going to be Harry's problem at some point that, and he's, you know, the problem being the little whispered scary words, you know, that so duty, obligation, you know, struggle, all of these things, it's just building that we know Harry's going to be put in a precarious situation. And I guess I will find out what exactly that is. But I think the Ten of Wands is a very appropriate card for where we are at in the Chamber of Secrets.
Indeed. And definitely because in this particular Harry, naturally, it's my problem because I'm the one that heard the voice that led us to this horrific scene.
Yeah.
So it's a natural, you know, inclination that I'm the one hearing the voice that happens before bad shit goes down. So.
Right.
So it's going to be my problem. Again, after his experience with Voldemort in the previous book, he's just like, well, I'm freaking Harry Potter and crap just happens to me and I got to deal with it.
Hey, at least he's not like sitting there and being moaning Myrtle. I don't know.
This is true. Again, he could wallow in it, but he's just like, oh, well, it is what it is. Just another Tuesday.
I'm glad I've had some crappy weekdays. I'm glad I don't have to like hear
scary voices. Not yet. I mean, God knows what the future holds, but.
And then our next exercise is fan fiction time.
Yay. Okay. I went pretty light with this. I just kind of wanted to think about if they went to the Halloween bash instead of going to the Death Day party. I think it might have put them on kind of, I think it's kind of a bummer for, they may have had a little bit more trouble with Nearly Headless Nick because he might have been, his feels might have been hurt a little bit. But I feel like the rest of it would have played out. I guess they kind of would have been lost in the fray, or maybe Harry would have kind of caused a scene because he started hearing the voice and run out, you know? I don't know, but that was kind of my fantasy.
I guess it all depends on the location of this voice that would have Harry, had he gone to the feast, would he have had the opportunity to have heard it, or would he have just stumbled upon this like everyone else? And and that narratively could have gone perfectly fine because he could have not heard it in that one instance and then see the horrible writing on the wall and then think back to Lockhart's detention, be like, I heard that voice not too long ago. Could that be related?
Yeah.
Good point. It could have totally worked.
Yeah. I feel like I kind of like didn't come up with a great one for this one because there were so many things happening. And I just thought that was kind of I would have liked to see what would have happened. But what was your fan fiction this
year? Here, let me find it. I forgot about it. Oh my God, don't tell me I lost it. Oh, I remember mine. My scenario was, what if Ron had succeeded in cursing Malfoy?
Ooh, that's excellent.
Again, Hagrid already kind of delved into it, that it wouldn't just be, oh, Ron, you shouldn't have done that, and this feeling. It would have been a brief time of, you know, validation and vindication, but ultimately Lucius Malfoy would have come a-knocking, and what would have happened after that?
I don't know if anybody really wants to know that, because that would have been bad news. I mean, I feel like when you're involving somebody that prideful, I just think about kids, like when the kind of like kid that's not used to getting in trouble or not getting his way, something happens, like all hell breaks loose for the people around him. So,
yeah. And I was just kind of thinking about, yeah, again, how you'd like discipline or how you define like assault in these sort of settings, that number one, they're children. And, you know, because some people have like equated like them carrying these wands around with carrying guns around.
Whoa.
Because, you know, you can use, there is a spell you can use to kill someone.
Do they learn that? When do they learn that spell?
They don't learn it. It's illegal to learn it. So.
Oh, okay.
They don't learn it. And it's like, it's not something that they're taught, but it's still within the realm of possibility. And so I understand that metaphor. I don't like to, because again, like a wand is used for so much more than just like being a weapon.
So you really got me with that wand as a gun thing. I'm just thinking of like somebody like Hermione. It seems like it would be figure out to bull. So not a word. But now that's what I'm going to think about tonight, is that kind of analogy. It's pretty intense.
Yeah. And so just the idea of how do you do a balance between, yes, you deliberately assaulted someone. And again, combining that with what we've already discussed of how much bodily harm can these people withstand, these magical people can take, and how, and therefore, because they can be so easily healed, how seriously do they take it? Certainly probably not as much as they would have, you know, in our non-magical setting.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Like if someone put something in my food or drink that caused me to throw up, like that would constitute some form of, you know, assault or something.
Yeah. Definitely.
And there are even some people who are, you know, some anti-maskers who are deliberately coughing or spitting on something, and the police are charging them with like assault and stuff like that in, you know, because there's a precedent for it in the pandemic.
As they should. I mean, that's ridiculous. I'm sorry if you're an anti-masker. I don't want to talk to you. Like, just don't, I mean, you know, don't freaking cough on somebody. That's even gross when it's like, when we're not dealing with coronavirus, like just trying to, I don't know. I really don't like, I guess I'm a tree hugging hippie. I just don't understand. Yeah,
it reminds me of, again, one of the viral ones of the anti-masker in Panera Bread. Did you see that one?
No, I haven't.
But, well, she was blowing in someone's face and people were like, oh, grow the fuck up, lady. And she was saying something to the effect of, like, the masks don't help. And her, like, analogy was that if you fart in your jeans, like, you still smell it and hear it and stuff. So basically she was equating that to why masks don't work.
Oh, my God. I'm so glad that these people are, like, scientists and they have all these degrees that apparently, like, they got on, I don't know, freaking their old friend from high school's Facebook account. Like, how obnoxious. I'm sorry. How obnoxious.
But anyway, so yeah, like definitely Lucius Malfoy would have come to the school. Definitely, specifically Lucius Malfoy would want to have pushed it just because of the specific rivalry between the Weasleys and the Malfoys. Lucius would have loved to like stick it to Arthur even more and would have exploited that to do so.
You're very right. Also, Malfoys, anti-maskers, what do we think? Would they be the anti-masking type? Since we were talking about anti-masking, I feel like... there's my fanfic, yeah, coronavirus in the wizarding world.
I think there already are a few by now.
Oh my God. Okay. I probably won't read those right now.
Yeah. No, I think they could be in the context of them thinking like we're so magically powerful and pure blood that we can withstand whatever muggle disease comes our way.
Yeah.
So that's the one, that's the only angle I could think of them being anti-masker. I don't know how, you know, Slugs and Malfoy and Ron became, you know, anti-mask rant.
I don't know, but that's okay. I think we were just talking about like the kind of defiance of the anti-masking people who are like purposefully infecting somebody. And we're talking about like how Malfoy cursed some, or, you know, the slug curse on Malfoy, and, or, you know, if that would have happened and kind of,
yeah,
like harm.
So, yeah, because the anti-masker, it's a special type of stupid, because it's not this quite the same as being racist.
Yeah.
Because being racist means you just think certain people are better than others, and, like, anti-mask is much more rooted in, I don't want to believe in science.
Right, right. Very true. Very true.
So, yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I never knew that people were so anti-science.
I didn't either. And it is an unfortunate thing, but I watched something about
it. And if you dare to criticize them, you're called sheeple.
I'm a sheeple then. That's fine. I don't that's fine. I work with a lot of scientists and very smart people and, you know, veterinarians in particular. And I'm just going to stop talking. That's what I'm going to do.
Yep. Alrighty then. And that concludes episode 4 for the Chamber of Secrets. Tune in next time and we will go over chapters 9 and 10, The Writing on the Wall and The Rogue Bludger. And joining us will be a very special guest. It's actually a professor with specific specializations in nationalism and tribalism to discuss all these Hogwarts house rivalries and pureblood supremacies.
Whew! Exciting. But I will come prepared, but I'm sure you both will. I cannot wait to hear that discussion. I'm very excited. It'll be very interesting.
Yep. Catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.